Hello, Athlete Mindset community. This is Lisa Bontasumi, the host of Athlete Mindset. Before we dive into this episode, I want to invite you to support the mission and purpose of our show. For $10 a month, you can help to make sure these conversations get to as many athletes, teams, coaches, and sport mental health environments as possible. As a subscriber, you will receive exclusive content and updates on current topics in athlete mental health, and you'll be directly contributing to the betterment of mental health for all athletes. Join the cause. Subscribe at sportse.io/athlete and make a difference today. Again, that's sportse.io/athlete. With your support and amplification, we can ensure more voices are heard and more individuals and communities are positively impacted. Hey everyone, I'm so excited to be spending some time with Dr. Brooke Choulet today. I'm going to tell you all a little bit about her, but first I just want to have her say hello to everybody.
Hello, thank you so much for having me on today.
I'm so excited. It's going to be an awesome conversation, fun and educational at the same time. So let me tell the people a little bit about you. Dr. Brooke Choulet is a board certified concierge psychiatrist who works with children, adolescents, and adults. She specializes in performance psychiatry, helping busy professionals, high achievers, and athletes at all levels optimize their performance. Dr. Choulet received additional education in sports psychiatry, and she also completed a fellowship in child and adolescent psychiatry. She is passionate about having and helping high achievers enhance their mental health and lead more fulfilling lives. Dr. Choulet is well known for her role as president of the American Board of Sports and Performance Psychiatry, where she is also one of 7 founding members. Dr. Choulet has worked with athletes at all levels, from middle schoolers to professional sports leagues. She has extensive experience working in the NBA and WNBA as the previously served as a consulting team psychiatrist for the NBA Phoenix Suns and WNBA Phoenix Mercury for over 2 seasons. I'm so happy to be here with you. This is going to be a great conversation.
Yes, so I've been looking forward to today.
I know, me too. me too. So I want the people to get to know you a little bit more and more about your profession. So how would you describe the profession of psychiatry? Because I think there's a lot of misinformation, inaccurate information out there, and I just want it to come from the source, the expert source. So how would you describe the profession of psychiatry?
Sure. I think that's such a deep dive in and of itself, but to keep it brief, I feel like it's really, if well done, looking at the whole person, identifying what their symptoms are, what their life stressors are, what their upbringing's been, really taking it so individualized, an individualized approach to mental health care, and providing possibly psychotherapy, otherwise known as talk therapy, and if indicated, medications. So I think really the combination of the two is what differentiates psychiatry.
Yes. So you know that I'm a psychotherapist, talk therapy, therapist person. What's the difference between me and you? Why would someone like work with me and then possibly work with you as a team approach?
Sure. So psychotherapists have such extensive training in certain types of therapy and can use several modalities. Whereas psychiatrists go to medical school, and while different programs have different types of exposure to therapy, even though I went to a psychotherapy heavy program, that does not mean that all psychiatrists have extensive experience in therapy. And really, that's the difference. And certainly when someone needs a very specialized type of therapy, I 100% refer to my therapy and psychology colleagues, because there is such a need for that specialized education in different talk therapies that psychiatrists just haven't had the exposure to in general. Now, there are some psychiatrists that pursue additional training in, let's say, psychoanalytic therapy or different types of therapies, but without getting into the nitty-gritty too much, I think that's the biggest difference.
No, thank you for that. Yes, exactly. And just to take it to another level, if I was to call you and say, hey, Dr. Brooke, I have this client I'm working with, this athlete I'm working with, what would be something that I should be telling you would be a good referral? why wouldn't I be able to just go ahead and use my psychotherapy education and training? Why would I be like calling you for that? What would be a presenting issue?
Sure. I think some things include possible ADHD, where an athlete's mm-hmm. really struggling to concentrate, maybe has a history of ADHD and needs a TUE, or what's known as a therapeutic use exemption, since that is a prohibited substance in most professional leagues, mm-hmm. of the stimulants used for ADHD treatment. Another common referral reason is needing depression or anxiety medication, because now, despite therapy, their, you know, symptoms have become so debilitating that they're no longer able to complete their daily tasks. And then on the flip side too, sometimes before being able to engage in meaningful therapy, if someone's depression and anxiety is so severe, it might need medication to decrease the volume of those symptoms to then be able to participate meaningfully in therapy.
Yes, that's so important. And thank you for that. I know that for me and the athletes I work with, mm-hmm. if I even start the conversation to say, hey, just talk to this psychiatrist and get a consultation, just ask questions. Mm-hmm. The number one fear is, if they recommend or prescribe medication to me, I'll be addicted. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to depend on something else to do my life. What would be your response to something like that?
I love that question, because I oftentimes use the analogy of asthma, right? Mm-hmm. If you're having an asthma attack and we're looking at you having an asthma attack, do we say, you know, just breathe better? You can get through it. Just breathe better. You can do it. No, they need a rescue inhaler. And so there are times where it's the same with mental health. And I think that's where we're all working on that stigma, is you need the equivalent of that inhaler, right? You need to treat this with something stronger than just therapy. And no, that does not mean that you'll be on it for life. It does not mean that you can't taper off of it eventually, if that's what you and your psychiatrist decide is the best course of treatment. And so the other end of that question too is, I think that's why it's so important for athletes to see someone that's specialized in working with athletes. Because when we see someone in our clinic that works, I like to say, a regular office job rather than being out on a quarter field, there's not as many concerns about how the potential side effects of, let's say, possible weight gain or possible sleepiness will impact their job immediately. Whereas in the sport world, you have to be so incredibly attentive to the possible side effects, and explaining that to the athlete, as that could significantly impact their performance.
Yes, yes. The side effects, because sometimes they think like they're doing it wrong, or like, this isn't helping me, because you and I both know that the side effects are temporary and we need to kind of move through that and settle in and find the right dosage and all that. But a lot of athletes give up on that, be like, no, it's messing me up too much. Like, what kind of conversation do you have with them when that comes up?
Well, I think, you know, setting expectations of what possibly mm-hmm. could happen, because I'd much rather tell an athlete, here are all the potential positives and how it could benefit you, and here's the potential side effects. So let's figure out a day where maybe it's an off day and you don't have practice or a competition. And I think those are the small nuances in working with athletes that if someone saw a general psychiatrist or a general psychotherapist, would really be almost missing that, because that's not who they specialize in working with. And really knowing the day-to-day schedules and demands of an athlete is, it's just a whole nother world.
Absolutely. And obviously you have a lot of expertise and experience in that. So it's so important to have someone like you out here helping our athletes at all levels. It's a complex profession. You had to go to medical school for years and years. You had to specialize for years and years. What brought you to this profession? Why psychiatry, and why working with high performers and athletes?
Yeah, so my mom and grandpa actually were child and adolescent psychiatrists, but working in very different fields. So my grandpa worked in juvenile detention most of his career in academics at Mizzou, and published a lot of papers and really worked in an academic institution for a while. And then I saw my mom on the flip side, who was in a solo private practice, and it was always just been her forever. And I saw how much of an impact they were able to have on people's lives. I'd have people stopping me being like, oh my gosh, is, you know, Dr. Kashani your mom? And she helped me so much, and aww, just in the most random of ways. And I gave it, you know, I gave every specialty, you know, a try. Going through medical school, you deliver babies, you scrub it on surgery, all that good stuff. but I still kept finding my way back to psychiatry and really loving the continuity of care over time, where I could say this because my husband's in hospital medicine, but he sees people for maybe up to a week while he's on shift, and then they get discharged and you never see him again. And I just really cared, and I wanted to follow people over time. And that's why I chose outpatient psychiatry, especially over inpatient medicine.
Yeah, it sounds like the relationship that you build in this kind of treatment modality with you and your patients is really important to you. That's awesome. It's like a family tradition to be in psychiatry.
I guess so.
And how come high performers and athletes, what is it about that population that attracts you and that you feel a passion for?
Sure. So I actually, you know, when I was in residency and then fellowship, I knew I wanted to start a concierge psychiatry group where people had my cell phone number, email address, they could get a hold of me. There was no barriers to accessing care, no obstacles to getting on the phone. And I started out, you know, just doing concierge psychiatry 5 years ago, and it just landed in my lap one day. I had hired a psychologist here. She was working with the team at the time, introduced me to the team. The NBA had more strict requirements on needing a psychiatrist available to consult for players. And I just absolutely fell in love with the sports world and working with athletes. And it just meshed so well with that concierge model where I am available to my patients. I don't care if you're 12 or 72 or what your profession is. I'm here and you can get a hold of me if needed between sessions. And I found that with the athletes, it's even though they know I have a medical license to uphold and confidentiality is an absolute must, I would say it took a season for people to see me around and talk to me before they were even really comfortable telling me what's going on and wanting to talk on that deeper, more clinical level. So I just found that concierge psychiatry really meshed well with athletes, whether they be active, retired, or seeing their kids. And it really kind of fun from there.
No, that's so important. I mean, I think what you're saying around it took a season, they need to know you, they need to know that you're a real person, that you're available and accessible, you're not behind this desk and like only at certain hours can you actually come in and you have to actually come in. Like those are all barriers. Those are all barriers. And I think that having specializations like you and I do with athletes, we understand that we have to, I don't want to say like earn their trust or prove who we are. I think we do. Like for me, working with the Oakland Roots in the USL here in Oakland, the first team, it does take a time. They want to see that you care beyond what's going on in the relationship, right? That you care about their team, their sport, them as humans, that you're accessible, that you're roaming the facilities. You know, like that's really, really important. So thank you so much for highlighting that. The concierge, tell me more about that. I think that's really interesting. Tell me more about how you define concierge services and how you apply that.
Sure. So I guess I'm a little more out of the box than the typical concierge care model. So for those who don't know, typical concierge medicine is an annual subscription or monthly fees and really tying people into that relationship, in my opinion. And so I think for me, it was really important to give people autonomy over their own care too. Where if it's not a good fit with me, I want to find someone who's a good fit for you. So I chose to pursue a route of concierge medicine that was much more almost similar to an attorney's billing, where it's just by time. If you need an hour today, let's take an hour today. If you need 30 minutes next time, let's take 30 minutes. And really, it doesn't mean you're not keeping people accountable. I see people regularly and at a maximum every 3 months. But really just allowing people to have the care that they need when they need it. If things are harder, our appointments are longer, being accessible between. And so I really felt strongly that I wanted to offer that level of service without tying people to a monthly fee or annual subscription.
I see. And that you're actually more available, like the sort of the texting or the calling or things like that is also something you offer.
Exactly. And I really don't like to do clinical things over text. So if someone texts me and they're like, hey, I'm really struggling, I'm like, okay, I'm available in 30 minutes. Let's hop on the phone. So they can still access me and get a hold of me, but we can still do treatment in a way that's clinically indicated.
For sure. And I think that's important. Like again, managing expectations, setting boundaries. When you text, this is what's going to happen and this is what's not going to happen. I'm going to direct you to where we can have a conversation. I think it's great. You are the president of the American Board of Sports and Performance Psychiatry and one of the 7 founding members. What brought you and your colleagues to found this organization?
Sure. I think a little bit, like we talked about before, working with athletes, it's such a specialized population. And the psychologists for a while have had, their ASP and the sport and performance psychology programs, really, they have it down. But in the psychiatry world, there was no board certification. There are some, membership groups out there, but there is not a board certification that's US-based. And we really wanted to provide a structured, standardized education and way for people to receive board certification. And, for those that are just interested in sports psychiatry that haven't worked with athletes, creating an educational curriculum for them to go through. So we have 2 of our 3 pathways to board certification available. Those who've completed 2 current certifications that are out there, plus meeting some additional criteria. And then those that have been working in sports for over 3 years and have significant kind of background in working with athletes. So we're really trying to expand access to psychiatrists to receive board certification so that we can create a free directory on our website so that if any, USA, swimming or any sort of team or organization out there is looking for a credentialed board certified sports psychiatrist, that they could just go to our website and click on the directory tab and get that information for free.
No, it's amazing on so many levels. I think that it continues to normalize and destigmatize the profession, your profession in psychiatry, and then the specificity of the sport and performance side. And that there is like an oversight and sort of a governing body that can kind of help sort of vet people and that they are in accordance with what is needed to be ethical and legal in their practice, and that it allows teams and individual athletes to kind of go there for free and kind of check it out and kind of interview folks and sort of like take a look and learn about them. So I think it's really, really, really valuable. I know what stood out for you in your sort of like personal professional journey is that you are entrepreneurially minded, that you are a business person, you think beyond the care, and that they can both exist together, because that's how I think. And some people are like, but aren't you a psychotherapist? I'm like, yeah. And right. And I do this, this, and this. And actually the transferable skills of being a psychotherapist, a podcaster, an author, all the different identities I have all feed into each other, right? So I would love to have you comment kind of on your mom was a solo practitioner for a long time. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some influence there, but like what brought you to kind of embrace and be okay with and celebrate the entrepreneurial side of the work that you do?
Yeah, that's a really tough question, because at a young age, coming out of residency and fellowship, I was so motivated to transition into my own practice. I don't know why people told me I was crazy. They're like, just get a hospital job and maybe mid-career you can look to start your own thing. And there was a lot of people telling me that that was the wrong direction to go in. And so for me, I really wanted to persevere and overcome that and set myself up to be able to transition into my own business full-time when I was done. So I remember interviewing for my child psychiatry fellowship, and I told the program director, I'm like, just so you know, I'm going to start a business when I'm in fellowship. I'm going to start a group in Scottsdale. You might see it online. I won't be seeing patients until I'm allowed to, but I'm going to start this business and I'm going to hire people and it's not going to impact my fellowship. And I don't know what made her say yes, but thank God she did. And I grew my group within, I just started it 4 years ago. And within 2 years, we had over 3 other psychiatrists and therapists working there. I remember being in fellowship, trying to manage it while I was in didactics, and it was complicated. But like you said, I was really entrepreneurially minded. I knew what I wanted to accomplish, and I had to figure out, like, how do I get from point A to point B? And what are all the steps in between while I have no extra money because you barely get paid in fellowship. And I really had to kind of hustle and make it happen and learn things on my own. And so for me, I was just so motivated to get there so that by the time I graduated, I could just step into this office exactly. And it was really just a lot of hours and a lot of perseverance.
No, it's impressive and great. And I think that so many times as women, we're told you can't do that. Or that's not the way you're supposed to do it. Or like, and so it was great that your person at the time was a woman and could see that and maybe value it and support it. I'm still very curious. And here I am. I'm going to kind of go a little deep here.
Yeah.
Like, what is your why? Or how come you were so persevering? Or how come you really wanted to do that? What was inside you or around you that pushed you through it? Because it's not easy. I mean, I can speak from experience. It's not easy. What is it that moved you so deeply to want to just keep growing this and build it?
I guess the three big words would be autonomy and then patient care. I saw the care that was being given in academic institutions. And not to say it's bad, it just wasn't the type of care I wanted to give. I didn't want to be rushed by some clinic director telling me I had 15 minutes to see a patient. I knew I needed more. And so on one hand, it was the patient-centered care that really drove me and wanting to do it on my own terms based on what the patient needed at the time. And on the other hand, autonomy, where I knew I wanted to have a family back when I started. Now I have a one-year-old daughter. And knowing that I just really wanted to be able to have the autonomy where if I couldn't work Monday because my daughter was sick, I could block my schedule. So I think speaking both personally and professionally, this made the most sense for me. And I just knew I had to make it happen.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting because it same, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It, in me wanting to do the same when I first started my private practice and as a solo practitioner, like wanting to have that flexibility and autonomy is, as you say, to have a life outside of my work, to build a family, to grow a family, to be available to myself, my partner, like to, like, just like the athletes, we're human too. Like, this is our job and our work, and we need other things and other parts of our lives to fulfill us and to add to that passion that we give. We give a lot to others. And so, like, it's important for us for that to work. So,
yeah, I totally agree. And I think that that's what makes us good at our jobs, right? Is that when we're fulfilled and happy in our personal life, we can give more and be there, you know, exceptionally in our professional life. And I'm with you. I think having that work-life balance is the ultimate path to happiness, because if you're not happy in your personal life, it bleeds into your professional. And if you're not happy professionally, it bleeds into your personal. And I really try and practice what I preach by being content in both. Because how am I supposed to guide someone to being happy and finding their path to success and enhancing their performance if I feel like I can't even do that?
Exactly. Exactly. We have to practice what we preach and feel what that feels on a deep level so that we are that much more inspired to keep helping others to do the same, because we know what it's like. We're not just reading out of a book. We're living this thing too alongside y'all when we like do this work. So, and I think they feel that. I think they feel that and feel that it's genuine, because they can sniff us out. The minute they're like, whatever, and like it's not genuine, they're going to be like, I'm not talking to you. And so we have to be. I mean, is that your experience too?
I completely agree, because genuinely caring, like I genuinely care. When a player moves here, their girlfriend's pregnant, I'm like 48 hours got you into an OB-GYN because I care. Like I want you to be happy. And at one point I was told to kind of stay in my lane and that's not my job. But to me, that's just caring about another human is, you know, being someplace new, you have to pick up and go all the time.
Right.
You know, like I wish if I were in that position that there would be someone to help me.
Absolutely. So again, back to the beginning of like you treat your patients as full, well-rounded, multidimensional humans, and that they're not just commodities on the court or field to produce, that they have lives, they have relationships that matter to them. And we got to make sure we're addressing all of that. And so this has been awesome. I'm so happy to like get to know you and your work. And is there anything else you might want to share? I know that you have private practices in California as well as Arizona. Anything else that you're working on right now that we can highlight?
Right now, I am working on starting a community locally in Scottsdale called Scottsdale Professionals Collective, which is a community of attorneys and healthcare professionals that are all coming together to support each other and provide resources to one another. Because like you said before, we go through professional school to learn our profession and they don't teach us business. They don't teach us how to run things. And I guess that's where my passion bleeds outside of my professional life, is that I want, even outside of my work in the community, to have everyone have those resources and make it easier for people that are leaving hospital medicine or leaving corporate law and just figuring out how to run their own business.
I love it. I love it. Like, yeah, they don't teach us that. And that inherently is problematic for me, because as if to say that you can't do that, or you're not supposed to do that, or like stay in your lane, like you said. Like, the more someone says stay in your lane to me, the more I'm going to like go out of my lane, just because that's who I am. And I think that we both have a fire in different ways about that. Like, we don't want to be hindered or like limited. And so I really impressed with that and really love that about you. And I look forward to like our continued relationship and getting this episode out to people to have them listen in. I think it was really, really important and valuable.
Thank you so much. And thank you for taking the time to have this conversation. I love getting information out to the community. And if anyone could just take away one thing from today, it's if someone doubts you or has something to say about your dreams, like, silence the noise and just persevere and keep doing it.
Love that. And on that drop the mic moment, well, thanks everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Athlete Mindset is part of the CASSource Podcast Network. At CASSource, we love podcasts. In fact, we love building podcasts, everything from development to production. Because of all that, we're growing this one-of-a-kind podcast network. If you have a podcast or looking to launch a new podcast, then we should talk. You can message me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz, or hit us up any way that works for you by searching CASSource on your social media app of choice. Let's talk about your podcast joining this one-of-a-kind podcast network, the CASSource Podcast Network.